Hello, and welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. This is the first episode of mine that you stumble upon and you enjoy it. Please feel free to follow me wherever you listen to podcasts so you can get notified when I upload a new episode. I typically upload on Sundays, but honestly, I'm covering Big Brother 26 right now, and with the amount that I have to go through to make my notes, my Big Brother recaps take me longer to prepare than most other recaps because it's a week's worth of 24-hour, quote-unquote, it's not always 24 hours, but, like, it's live feed, and I don't cover, like, hour by hour, minute by minute, but, like, I do, there is just a lot to cover where other shows, when I'm recapping them, it's like an hour of content that I watch and then rewatch and take notes, so it takes me a lot longer to compile my notes for the Big Brother recap, so I end up often recording later than I anticipated, and then the episodes have just been later. So typically Sundays or Mondays, on occasion a Tuesday episode. Tuesday is the latest my episodes ever go live. This episode I anticipate going out Monday. I'm recording it Sunday morning, so I should be fine to have it out by Monday. But sorry for those disclaimers. It's good to follow me so you can get notified. I also tweet updates and delays on my Twitter, which is linked below if you're interested. But this is going to be my coverage on week 9 of Big Brother. Right? Are we on week 9? I don't know. It's janky week, the janky week recap. Yes, it is week 9. Sorry, I was checking my notes because it was like week 8 just happened. So this is week 9 of Big Brother, aka janky week, which I love janky. I'll be honest. So anyways, on Thursday, I'm just going to jump straight in. All my social media is linked down below. If you have any comments, concerns, feedbacks, critiques, I do check my message requests. Thank you so much for tuning in. It means a lot. And if you enjoy the podcast, maybe share it with a friend of yours who would like a Big Brother recap podcast that's like, it's once a week. It's like a weekly recap, a lot more condensed than like those daily podcasts. But I do watch feeds, so it's not just about the episodes, yada, yada, yada. My little spiel. But anyways, on Thursday, Quinn was evicted. I was in mourning. It was really sad. And we found out that going into the following week, Ainsley was stepping away into week 9. Ainsley was stepping away and Janky is replacing her. And that's the last we saw on Thursday. Feeds went down overnight. So I typically cover like what happened on the Thursday after the eviction, but there's nothing to cover because feeds went down and they didn't come back until like Friday morning, Friday mid-afternoon. I don't even remember, but they were down for like hours and hours and hours. When feeds came back, we found out that they're all outside, right? We hadn't seen any of this. It just came back and everybody was outside and we found out that they were living outside. We saw in the edited episode with Sunday's episode that Janky came on the little screen. He made an announcement. He's like, who likes pizza and dance parties and all of this? And they're like, us. And they go outside all excited. And the backyard is decorated. It's Janky world. And then they find out that they are stuck out there for the week. The indoor is locked. They are trapped outside for the entire week. The HOH competition is an endurance comp that they have to build themselves. And it is a campfire theme thing, marsh s'mores, where they hold a, it's similar to a comp they did in Big Brother 18 that somebody I don't like won, where it was like a traffic light in that instance. But basically it's like you hold something to then maintain. They had like sticks with marshmallows and they had to hold their marshmallow up against something. So they had to hold something standing on a little platform for hours until they dropped. And this would have been such an interesting competition to see on feeds. And I know I'm not the only person to say this, so I won't go on like a million tangents and rants, but it is really unfortunate that we didn't get to see this on feeds because the only endurance quote-unquote comp we've seen on feeds was wall. Like, that was advertised to us as like an endurance comp, and it was the shortest wall ever because I think they're just making the wall harder and harder, and it's like just brute strength. And it's unfortunate that they had a comp that lasted overnight and we didn't get to see it. I think it would have been really interesting feeds, but we didn't get to see it. We saw it edited in the episode, and it seemed like, again, it would have been such an interesting comp to watch. Anyways, the final three in the endurance comp are Cam, Angela, and Leah. Angela lasted nearly 10 hours, and she, we see in the edited episode, she's talking in her DRs about how she really only cares about safety. The three of them make a deal. She's like, I've already had two HOHs. I've gotten letters. I've gotten pictures. Neither Cam nor Leah have had that. I want one of them to have it. We made this deal. I feel safe. So she stepped down. Then Cam and Leah, it's down to just Cam and Leah. So they have a discussion about how they will... She's like, I'm not going to drop. And they decide that they will stand on one leg, and whoever lasts on the one leg will win. So Cam and Leah standing on one leg, and Cam drops his marshmallow. And therefore, Leah's the HOH. When Feeds came back and Leah was the HOH, I was screaming, crying, throwing up. I was so excited. I was so proud of her. I was also obviously sad because Quinn is gone, and Quinn has been wanting a Leah HOH. He's been like, he believed in her. He really believed in her. And also he liked the idea of the Direfest twist because he liked the idea of living outside for a week. So it's a little unfortunate that they lived outside a week after he got evicted. I was like, they really hate Quinn. Quinn can't catch a break. Not to make this week about Quinn, because it's about Leah. And I was really proud of her. I know I said weeks and weeks ago that I liked Leah as a person. Like, I found her entertaining, but I didn't know if I really connected with Leah as a player. And I do think she is not in the best position to maybe take it all the way. But it's been really nice to see Leah kind of come into her own as a player. We saw more of her thought process when she used the veto on Angela and talking about how her friendships mean something to her, but it's a game at the end of the day. Like, I really like the way Leah talks about the game. When Quinn was nominated, she was upset because she was like, it doesn't make any sense. They're going after Quinn. There's a trio, like all of these things. And I think Leah, like, I like the way, and I think Leah, for a while I was like, I don't know if she's a floater because I don't know how intentional it is, but I do feel like there was a level of, like, I'm going to float to where the power is. Maybe she didn't have, like, the vocabulary to be, like, this is... Like, because she didn't have the Big Brother knowledge, I'm not questioning her intelligence. But it's, like, not everybody knows what a floater is, especially because floater itself has been misconstrued and, like, distorted. But I feel like she's a very good floater. And she did a good job this week, in my opinion, as the HOH. And I was just happy to see her, like, it's nice to see her win competitions, and it's nice, like, the thing about this season that's been so lovely to watch is that there's constantly a shakeup. Somebody I'm sad about losing goes home, but then there's, like, a pendulum swing, and, like, the person I wanted to win the HOH, like, no matter what happened this week, it was a shakeup, because if anybody besides Angela won HOH, the easy noms would have been Angela and Leah, because there are the two trios. Now, do I know if, I do think that the T-Core, Rubina, Chemo trio would have nominated Angela and Leah. Do I know if, like, Chelsea won, if she would have nominated Leah, if Cam couldn't have nominated Leah or Angela, I guess, if he had won in that scenario. But it was just an interesting shakeup because Angela and Leah have been kind of like easy noms, like ideas of easy noms for, like, the trio. Like, it was a nice shakeup because it felt like if Leah didn't win, it was either Angela or Leah going. Maybe it would have been Chemo Angela noms with Angela going unless she won veto. Like, it feels very... I wasn't watching this live, like, when it was airing live, because I didn't start watching Big Brother until Big Brother 18. That's the first season I ever watched, Big Brother 18. Kind of embarrassing. But anyways, it's not even that good of a season. I don't know why I kept watching. But I have seen Big Brother 20. I have seen Big Brother 6 now. And Big Brother 6 is such a compelling season to watch even years later, knowing who wins, because there were these two main alliances and the power was always shifting. Like, it wasn't like a steamroll, and there were strong alliances and strong sides, but the pendulum always swung. It was like one person, one on the friendship, one the HOH, then the Sovereign 6 won an HOH. Like, it was nice if one alliance won HOH, the other one would win a veto. Like, it was a constant shakeup in a really, really nice way that this season feels similar to, because it feels like there hasn't been, like, a power alliance dominating. Like, the power alliances then, like, there was a power alliance and then they got blown up and then, like, the other side dominated a little bit, and then the, like, it's been really nice television in that I don't know what's going to happen week to week, and I appreciate that as a viewer. Anyways, I didn't mean to go on that random. I don't even know where I got lost. I have no idea. Oh, I was just talking about how happy I was to see Leah's the HOH. But anyways, also, I forgot to mention this, but Leah started her period during the competition, so she was free bleeding. I don't believe that was mentioned on the show at all, but she did talk about it on feeds, and I thought that was so iconic. I would get my period and I would give up. Like, I'm not even kidding. She's slayed. Also, in Janky World, they can only eat pizza and ice cream. They have to sing his theme song whenever he wants. They have random dance parties and stuff like that. And you know what? Justice for Janky. He's a cutie pie. I like Janky. I do. He's sweet. What can I say? I like Janky. He just wants friends. I can relate to that. Also, he's really cute. And throughout the week, they had these Janky World hats that they wore, and like shirts and merch and stuff. I did. My sister bought me a Janky World trucker hat. I'm so excited for that to come for me to rock it. He's such a cutie pie. I love Janky. I will say, though, and again, this is not a unique sentiment, but it did kind of slow feeds down for the week to have everybody outside, because there weren't as many, like, individual, like, it was a lot of group conversations, and most of feeds, like, you would occasionally get, like, a good one-on-one where you got some more game talk, but it was a lot, like, general bonding, personal, not having to do with game kind of conversations, because there was no room for people to, like, really congregate. Like, people would have one-on-ones, but it wasn't that common for, like, when the house is open, it's like there are people in multiple rooms, right? And it's not, like, as sketchy when you're all out in the open. If, like, three people are congregating, that's a lot. Like, you can't do it as easily, because it's more, like, why are they in a little group to themselves? When it's a one-on-one conversation, it's kind of, like, especially after noms and when people have vetoes, like, those things were a little bit more possible later in the week. But definitely the first few days of feeds were a little slow. I think generally feeds this week were kind of slow, just because there weren't a ton of individual game conversations, or like I don't know, it was just kind of everybody was in the same place at all times. So this episode is probably going to be a little bit shorter than my episodes normally are, because I don't feel like I have that much to say, but we'll see. Sorry if it is, but you know what, maybe that'll help me get it out faster rather than later. I lost my train of thought. On Friday, they have, before nominations, people have one-on-one conversations with Leah. And I will say that a lot of people really wanted Leah. Leah had said that she was thinking of nominating Chelsea and Tikor. She said that last week. And a lot of, I feel like some people were upset at Leah for not targeting Chelsea's little group. But I have to say that in these initial individual conversations before nominations, Chelsea did a really good job. Like, as much as Chelsea bothers me sometimes, and I don't really know if I'm rooting for her personally, I cannot deny that she's a good player, and she is good at connecting with people, having she's a good player. Like, I really can't deny that she's a good player. And I think the Tikor, Kimo, Rubina trio are a lot more passive than Chelsea, MJ, and Cam. Not just, like, comp-wise, they've won less comps as that trio, but also just, like, actively gaming. Their vibe has kind of been, like, friendship, we're good people, connecting. I will say Kimo and Rubina maybe game a little bit more than Tikor does sometimes. Like, the thing is, it's interesting because Tikor has such a presence, and she was so able to early in the game. Like, people on Twitter were, like, viewing her like a mob leader, because it's interesting because as time progressed, a lot of her, like, moves and the game seemed a lot less intentional and more kind of like when she orchestrated the Cedric eviction with chemo, it wasn't because she was like, it didn't seem like it was like this. Maybe there are true. I'm not saying that it's black and white, but it feels like the main priority. It was less about blowing up the alliance and more about, like, we got to save Rubina because Rubina is my closest friend. And it doesn't, I don't know how much that feels, like, strategic. Like, I don't know how much it was strategic or how much it was, like, based off of the personal friendship, which, whatever motivation, it was an interesting game move and it changed the course of the game, of course. So I'm not, like, trying to be, like, T-Core is not a good player. But anyways, I didn't mean to go on that unnecessary tangent. I guess my point was, based off of the initial conversations, I understand why Leah leaned the way she did in her nominations, even though Cam, MJ, and Chelsea may seem like more of a threat. I think it's also hard because it's like the T-Core Rubina chemo trio has been called a trio for longer. Like, they've just been more solid for a longer amount of time, so they're closeness seems more threatening than Cam, Chelsea, and MJ. Also, Chelsea complains about Cam all the time. MJ was kind of on the outs, and she was aligned with Leah at the beginning. So it's like, T-Core, Kimo, and Rubina have been locked in, like, for the majority of the game. So naturally, they just seem like more of a trio than Cam, MJ, and Chelsea, in my opinion. But anyways, nominations happen late on Friday, and Leah nominated Kimo and Rubina. And T-Core and Rubina, everybody's, you know, stuck in one place, so they're getting annoyed at people. And T-Core and Rubina are really, really annoyed by Angela at this point. Like, this is an ongoing thing. They even showed it in the episodes of T-Core being like, she's so annoying or whatever. Like, which I thought was interesting that they showed that in the episode of how much Angela is getting on their nerves. But anyways, on Saturday, playing in the veto were Leah, because she's the HOH, Rubina and Kimo, the noms, and then picked to play were Angela, T-Core, and Chelsea. So everybody in the trio was playing. So they had three chances, right? And obviously the worst case scenario for Leah in this instance is for T-Core to win the veto, because then she can save one of... she can save either Kimo and Rubina. She can't be the replacement nominee, and somebody outside of the trio will have to go up on the block, and it's possible that the trio, all three of them stay in the game, right? That is the worst case scenario for Leah. The veto was a puzzle. Also, whoever got second place got a janky veto. So they were like, keep playing even after somebody wins. So Angela wins the real veto, and then Leah wins the janky veto. So the trio, all three of them were playing, and there were two vetoes to win, and they couldn't win either. And it was a puzzle. So, like, they're really not comp threats. I'll give them that, as much as, like, they're a threat in one regard. I will say later in the game, like, the thing is, it's hard. It's hard because I still think weakening a trio is good no matter what. But you do also have to consider who's... but it's also hard because it's like, they've all won comps. This isn't a season where it's so clearly like Cam, MJ, and Chelsea are like the Jag, Matt, and Bowie of the season. It's not that black and white. They were saying for weeks Angela can't win anything, and then she was third place in the HOH, and she only lost because she took a step back. Like, it's just hard for me to say that they couldn't win, because you never know. They could have very easily won. But they didn't. And at that point, what are you going to do? We find out that the janky veto can only be used if Leah wins a janky carnival game at the veto ceremony. T-Core and Rubina talk about potential voting scenarios, about possibly having to lose chemo, about a potential backdoor, etc. They're just kind of like, they don't have any control, right? They don't have any of the vetoes, can't sway the votes, really. Like, they're just talking through every possibility. On Sunday, talks of the veto being used begin to occur, and Angela is considering using the veto on chemo. I have to be honest, maybe other people put two and two together. I missed this on feeds. When Angela used the veto on chemo, I was like, okay, like, that makes sense. She's trying to, like, but I didn't put two and two together that Angela's been worried about the fact that she voted to evict Kimo twice when she went against, and that was against the house, and that she's worried about the connection she's made with Kimo and Kimo no longer trusting her. Like, I hadn't put two and two together just how smart strategically using the veto on Kima was, because I was like, okay, she has the veto. Also, can I just say how funny it is that Angela has been nominated like every week that she hasn't been HOH, and the first time she wins the veto is a week she has no threat of going on the block because Leo wasn't going to nominate her. Like, you gotta laugh. Like, the show is so funny. Like, it's like, you can't write this shit. It's iconic. But alas, let me continue. So, I didn't realize, I thought, okay, Angela won a veto. She's had it used on her many times. She wanted to do that to somebody else as well because she's been in that position. I didn't really put two and two together that it was like she used it on Kima specifically to mend that bridge that she may have burned a little bit by voting to evict him twice and him having stayed in both instances. I didn't, like, that was very smart of Angela, I will say, and I really appreciate, like, I think Angela, would I like living with her? Would I like being a house guest in the same season as her? Probably not, but she's really good TV, and I also think she's smarter than a lot of people give her credit for. Like, that was a really smart move. It was a thought out move. It was a move that, like, I think that was really, really smart of her, and it didn't, like, it felt like it made sense. It was genuine, and it was, like, thought out and calculated. Like, I appreciated that thing that she put two together, because there are people who would, players on this season, who would vote to evict somebody twice, they don't get sent home, and then they don't think to repair that bridge or, like, and it, like, I don't know. I thought that was smart, and maybe, like, it wasn't that big a deal to people, but I really appreciated that because I don't feel like, I felt a little bit this season that not everybody is, like, actively gaming or thinking about things so, like, thought out. They're just kind of, like, in the moment, what would be the best. And I'm not saying that's not a good way to play the game, but this felt like a moment where I was like, that was a very, like, this is something that she's been thinking about now for 2 weeks, and she genuinely wanted to make amends, and that was just smart. I think that's smart. I think as chaotic and kind of abrasive, I don't know if that's the right word, but, like, Angela can be a little bit intense. As intense as she is, I think these kind of moments are amazing to see from her, because I do think she is good at the game in that regard. Like, I think she's good, not always. I think Angela's Achilles heel is that, like, when she knows what's going on, she has, like, a good read, but she'll, like, decide that something is what happened, and then that's her read on the situation based off of, like she'll assume things and make up scenarios in her head, and then based off of those assumptions, she, like, makes choices or decisions or has, like, thought out whatever. But when she's actually, like, grounded in reality and she's like, this is an issue for this reason, she's smart. I like Angela. As she's really interesting to watch, and it's amazing to watch her journey. I love Angela. Anyways, Kimo campaigns really well to Leah. I love to see him actively gaming. Like, he's been kind of annoying me a little bit, and I know I said this last week, where, like, he's just on the block and he's just there, like, on the block chilling, and that's annoying. I will give Kimo his props. He got out this week. He was rallying the votes. Maybe it was something about being up against, maybe it's the people he's up against. Like, maybe when he was up against Angela, he didn't think he was in as much danger, but then he was up against, and then he was up against Quinn, so he didn't really, like, maybe it's the people he's up against where he's like, I have no reason to fear, but when he's up against one of his allies, he's like, I'm fucked. I understand that, you know? So maybe that's it, but either way, I don't love the lack of campaigning, but I do appreciate the fact that he showed up this week, and he campaigned well to Leah about them working together, all of these things. Obviously, he talked to Angela. Angela hinted to him that she would use the veto on him to make amends for voting him out. And Leah and Angela are in, like, a solid final two. I think they were asked by the DR to come up with a name. And I don't know if they did come up with a name. And if they did, I missed it, and my apologies. But they're in a final two, and they talk about, like, the future plans, maybe aligning with the Chelsea MJ Cam trio, things like that. And Angela really thinks T-Core should go up and go home this week. That's, like, her main thing that she's trying to convince Leah. And because she is planning to use her veto, she tells Leah on Kimo, Leah's plan for the replacement is T-Core, and that's who Angela thinks should go home. We also find out from the edited show that I'll get to it, actually. Sorry. Moving on to Monday. The veto meeting slash ceremony happened very late in the day, and I was really frustrated watching this on feeds because the ceremonies have been very consistently around the same time every day, and it was like hours and hours and hours, and they hadn't had the veto ceremony. But I will say, Leah said at some point on feeds that they had to wait because of lighting, and since it's outside, that would make sense to me, because when they're inside the house, like, they can control the lighting. But there's probably something, like, it's definitely more complicated to shoot like something like that outdoors because of the sun setting, the sun moving, all of those things. So I'll give them that. Maybe that's what it's about, because I don't know. It felt like, I was like, man, they rushed that ceremony so fast when Quinn was the potential replacement. But I really think I'm going to give the show the benefit of the doubt, and I think it was the lighting. I don't think it was anything other than that, to be honest. Angela does eventually use the veto. And also Monday, the feeds were just kind of like not much happened because they were just waiting. Leah does talk to T-Core and they really just don't, I guess Rubina does an okay job, but like Kimo's really the only one in the trio that's fighting for himself. In my opinion, T-Core doesn't campaign very much during this week. But anyways, Angela uses the veto on Kimo. T-Core is the replacement nominee, which makes Leah the last person to ever been nominated on this season. As of Monday the 16th and as of the end of week 9, obviously she hasn't been nominated. Week 10 I will get into next week, so neither here nor there. But if she does get nominated, she will have been the last person. Like, currently, as of week 9, she was the only person to not have been nominated. And that's iconic. I will give her that. And you know what? T-Core went a really long time without being nominated either, so I'm going to give her that as well, because that is an accomplishment. I'm not trying to diss T-Core. But anyways, Leah then has to compete in the little janky comp to see if she can use her veto, and she doesn't win, so she can't use her veto. But we did find out, this is what I stopped myself from saying earlier, we did find out in the edited show that if she had won the veto, she would have used it to take Rubina off the block and nominate Chelsea. So that was the plan, which I think is smart of her, and I never doubted her. I never doubted her. Also on Monday, there is like a Cham, not Cham, there is a Chelsea Cam dynamic that really doesn't feel that game related. And honestly, I really don't enjoy it, and I don't want to talk about it. Like, the thing is, a lot of the things that happened this week feel kind of like, I'm not saying the personal doesn't impact the game. Like, of course it does. Of course it does. But the Cam Chelsea dynamic is one that genuinely pisses me off. Like, it pisses me off because Chelsea is such a good player, and she just, like, what is the point? What is the point of this? Like, it's so annoying. It's so annoying. And it's like, it's annoying because Chelsea likes Cam. They had a conversation about home, about maybe pursuing things outside of the house, but they don't want to do anything inside the house. That's the extent, right, of their conversation. Chelsea gets upset anytime Cam spends like time with another woman or like cuddles with another woman. And it's just a little bit annoying to me because it's like, maybe you do feel like that's disrespectful because he knows that you like him and you had a conversation about maybe pursuing things. But I find it a little bit annoying because you're not in a relationship. Like, there is no established boundary that he's crossing because you are not in a relationship. He is a single man. You are a single woman. If you wanted to, I mean, Cam's the only straight man left in the house, but if Quinn was still here, if Tucker was still here, whoever, if you wanted to pursue somebody else in the house, Cam would have no right to be like, that's disrespectful to me. You guys are not in a relationship. You don't have established boundaries. If you think it's like, it's just annoying to me. It's annoying to me. And it's like, I feel like she will say that she's upset for like a game thing, or she's worried that Cam will prioritize somebody else. And it's like, that doesn't feel like it's it to me. It really doesn't. It feels like there's like a personal level of like, she doesn't like Leah. It really bothers me. It really bothers me, the whole Cam Chelsea dynamic. And I really hate to talk about it because I'm like, I don't know. Obviously it has game implications because lack of trust impacts game decisions. But like, genuinely, I don't care about it. I really don't. They're not in a relationship. Chelsea has a right to be upset by situations, but Cam also, like, I don't know. And I will be honest, I do not know all of the intricate details. Not that I know any of the intricate details of anything this week, because I honestly didn't watch feeds as much as I normally do. But, like, I will be honest. This episode's going to be short, not only because I feel like Janky Week slowed things down, but because I personally didn't watch feeds that much. And so I feel like I have less to talk about. But I need to get an episode out every week. Plus, next week is the double, so that episode should be, like, a little bit longer, because I'm not only going to talk about the week, but I am going to talk about, like, what happened during the double. So episode, next week's episode, week 10, plus the double, will be probably a little bit longer than normal. So who cares if this episode is short? I really don't anymore. Anyways, I am sorry to Leah that your HOH week is the one that I'm kind of breezing through, but I honestly just don't have that much to say. Anyways, I really don't care about the Chelsea Cam of it all. I really don't. Angela is very much pushing for T-Core to be evicted. On Tuesday, Rubina campaigns and Angela promises Rubina that she will vote for her to stay, and she means it. T-Core is the current target consensus because she is the bigger threat. Everybody thinks that T-Core would win in the end against pretty much anybody, so they're kind of like, she makes sense to be the one to go because she's more of a threat jury-wise, which I do think is true. I, for a very long time, was like, everybody likes T-Core, and I think if she had played a little bit more actively in certain instances or done things differently, she could have gotten a lot farther. I think T-Core's Achilles heel is, like, the passivity, in my opinion. But right now, she's the current target. And I really just don't feel like she does much throughout the next few days to shift the target from her. I feel like she's kind of defeated, you know? Like, I feel I may have said this before, but I think one of T-Core's, the thing that I found most frustrating to watch is that it didn't feel like she had the ability to, like, pivot very often. Like, I feel like she would make a move and then that, like, something would change in the game and she would get annoyed that something was changing in the game, or like I don't even know. Like, she would, like, form a relationship and then it felt like she didn't do much to, like, maintain it. Like, the relationship with Quinn, right? She had that relationship with Quinn. Then she blew up the alliance he was in, but she still expected him to act as if the visionaries were, like, the core alliance, when why would he trust you again when you use the information that he shared with you to get one of his allies out in a blindside on his game, deepfake HOH? Why would he trust you? Like, it was moments like that where it felt like T-Core was just kind of like, well, we had this connection, that's it, you know? There was no, like, maintaining of things. There was no upkeep in these relationships, in these game decisions, follow-ups, anything like that, which made it a little frustrating to watch T-Core as a player. Also, T-Core and Rubina would have conversations about, like, how they want to be good people and they want to bring morality into the game and all of these things. And I do have quite a lot to say about that, because the thing is, I don't think you should be a bad person. I don't think you should be, like, intentionally malicious. I don't think you should be aggressive or mean or, like, hostile or, like, be a mean person to the people you're cohabitating with, obviously. And obviously, there are certain societal standards that translate into any game show, like human decency, you know, not being prejudiced or bigoted or, like, bullying. All of those things translate. But I think it's difficult for me when you're talking about, like, being a good person as, like, the main thing. I feel like people get, and I made a TikTok about this, my TikTok's also linked down below, but it's like, I feel like some people go on Big Brother and they view it as a show primarily and a game second. And that's fine, to each their own. It is a television show. I do want people coming to the show to make it entertaining and who have interesting stories, and all of those things matter. And representation matters, like who you represent and, like, empowering people. And it's a big platform. If you want to then utilize it to, like, have a message, that's great. But the first priority should be the game. And in the construct of Big Brother, being a good person is not built in. In the game of Big Brother, you will have to, cause harm to people. Not, like, real harm, not, like, but you are sending people home. You are costing people hundreds of thousands of dollars by sending them home. The goal of the game is to not be the best person at the end. it's to make sure that everybody except you and one other person gets sent out of the house, and then you are up against a person you can win at the end. That is the game of Big Brother. It's not a popularity contest or like who was the better person in the end. Do I think that people being bad people or malicious people or aggressive people obviously impact their win equity? Of course. There are people who have lost because of how nasty they were. You know, that is part of the game as well, because it is a social environment. Like, obviously there are factors in human decency, and like being a good person or being able to connect with people or all of these things matter in the game. I'm not saying you shouldn't care about human decency or like being a good person or all of those things, but it's annoying to me when it's like that's your main goal in the show. Is like, it's hard for me, because it's like you can also play the game though. Like Taylor went through a lot of bullying, a lot of really bad treatment on her season, and she played with her heart. She treated people with kindness. That heavily impacted the way she won at the end. If she had been nasty to everybody, she would have gone home a lot sooner. She killed them with kindness. She was a good person to them. Everybody left the house, even the people who she betrayed or she had had a conflict with, left the house feeling like Taylor didn't want them out. Taylor did her best. Those things matter. Like, how you treat people obviously matter. Paul lost because they were not a very, I mean, amongst other things, but like Paul and BB19, their behavior, obviously that was an issue to people. Natalie said that was Big Brother 18. Sorry. In Big Brother 18, Paul lost partially because of the way they treated people. Like, there was literally a question that Natalie had at the BB finale where she was like, why should I give you my vote when you didn't give me respect or something like that. Like, obviously those things matter. Being a good person in that regard matter. But it's annoying to me when it's like, but it's also a game. Some of the, like, you literally, the point of the game is to send people home. Like, Big Brother is the only scenario where I'm like cheering people on to get evicted. I don't want people to get evicted in real life. That's like a horrible thing to go through. I don't want people to lose out. Like, especially because these are your friends, you form connections. You don't want everybody, you care about these people. You'd be happy if they won $750,000. You don't want to come in between them and their success but you have to in order to win the game. You know what I mean? Like, it's just hard for me in that regard, because it's like, obviously being a good person matters and you have to care about being a good person. And I also think representation is really important. And if you have a story to share and you recognize the platform you're going on, that's wonderful. It's just annoying when it's like, I'm going to incorporate being a good person into the game. It's like you can't be a purely good person to win Big Brother. Like, you can't not lie at all. You can't not deceive people at all. I guess you could, but that seems really difficult and like unnecessary, because you know what the thing is? I feel like, I don't know, there are like, there's like 25 seasons, you know, to watch before you go on, if you were going on this season, to kind of figure out the pitfalls of certain strategies. And the strategy of like trying to be as honest as possible has not always worked for people. And that doesn't mean that they're bad people. It means they're playing a game and the goal of the game is to win. Like, lying in society, deceiving people, telling somebody one thing, denying reality, like gaslighting, is not a good thing in real life. And I'm not saying you have to deny reality about like serious things in the context of Big Brother, but it's like, if somebody's like, you wanted me out and you don't want to lose their vote in the jury, and you're like, no, I didn't, that person's lying, and you're denying something that you know is true, that's not a good thing to do in human life. If somebody's like, I heard this thing, or you were taught, like, lying, deceiving, all those things are not good ways to have interpersonal relationships, but you have to do it in the context of the game to have people, like, you know what I mean? Like, am I crazy? I don't know why I went on that unnecessary tangent. But anyways, Janky World, the shenanigans continue on Tuesday. Also, they sing Chemo happy birthday. Happy birthday, Chemo. Also, the Chelsea Cam drama continues, and I really don't care about it. I'm gonna be honest, I really don't care. On Wednesday, this is unrelated to the events inside the house, but it does impact the rest of the season. So they announced that Dr. Will is stepping away from hosting the Jury Roundtable after 10 years. He started in BB15 and then he did it every year since. I think they didn't have a... he wasn't the host during Big Brother 22, was he? I literally don't remember. Maybe he was. I blocked that season out of my memory. Because that was like they were wearing masks on stage with Julie. Like, you know, it was like that era of TV. So I'm like, I don't even know if they had a round table. I feel like they probably did. Because very early in the pandemic, obviously everything shut down because they didn't have like regulations or guidelines yet. They didn't know what to do. But as like we found out more about the disease, obviously productions resumed with precautions. So I feel like at that point, they probably, I don't even know. That's not really relevant. I don't know why I went on that unnecessary tangent. He's stepping away. Honestly, they haven't announced if they are going to have a replacement host, if they're just not going to have a host and they're going to go back to the way it was before BB15. If Julie is going to be the host, who knows? But I kind of hope they do get another host and it's like somebody who's like impressive, because as a super fan, I do feel kind of sad for Quinn. I'm like, he really can't catch a break. But anyways, we'll see. The trio, the T-Core Chemo Rubina trio, appreciate their last day together. They like commemorate their time together. Everybody's annoyed with Janky at this point, which like they're so mean to him. He just wants friends. It's not his fault. Justice for Janky. I love Janky. The Cam, Chelsea, MJ trio tell Leah that they will be voting to evict T-Core. She's the bigger threat, as I've said. And Angela really wants to be on the correct side of the vote, so she's trying to figure out where everybody else is voting, and everybody's leaning towards T-Core. On Thursday, during the live eviction episode, we get a segment about T-Core and Rubina now being on the block together, about them being emotional, about losing each other, about everything I've talked about T-Core being the bigger target. Chelsea's kind of hesitating to vote T-Core out for a little bit. Cam really wants T-Core to be voted out because of her relationship with Chelsea, and also she's the bigger threat. Rubina feels bad, but she is trying to campaign to save herself. Chemo is voting to keep T-Core. He's not really telling Rubina that he's gonna, like, he's kind of, Rubina even says during her DRs that she feels like he's just kind of congratulating her for getting as far as she has and not really saying that she's gonna stay or anything like that, which is kind of funny. But anyways, so that's kind of the first segment. Then we get a segment about the Cam Chelsea drama. Cam moves his cot closer to MJ because it's gonna rain and he doesn't want to be like, he's trying to cover his cot or something. Chelsea notices this. She gets annoyed. She moves her cot. Then he moves his to where hers was. And there's, like, all this tension. Chelsea really thinks that he is prioritizing other people over her. They have a conversation. It really is frustrating to watch, to be quite honest, in my opinion. Then the voting takes place. Everybody except Chemo votes to evict T-Core. Chemo votes for Rubina, and T-Core gets evicted. She does get some of her exit messages, goodbye messages, which is just unfair to Quinn, who didn't get any. Sorry. Honestly, I just, as a viewer, it's kind of unfair. We've seen in the extended interview, we've gotten everybody's goodbye messages for everybody. And then for Quinn, we don't get anything. And then T-Core gets all of them. Not all of them. But, like, T-Core gets some live on stage. And then they start playing the live HOH, but they don't finish it on the episode. I have to say, I think if they do a live HOH, it should be one of those, like, knockout comps or, like, a quiz. Like, I understand, like, the thing is, when people say they want a live HOH, they don't want the HOH to start on live, and then, because, like, that's not a live HOH. Okay, we saw the beginning of it. I don't really know. And that's where week 9 ends. Thoughts that I have. I'm proud of Leah. I think she stepped into her own. She made smart decisions. She targeted people she needed to target. Either way, it's a shakeup in the game. Getting T-Core out is huge. A lot of people thought T-Core was going to make it to the end, and if she was against almost anybody, she was going to win. She was my winner pick for a long time. So getting T-Core out, breaking up the trio, is great regardless. I mean, she was in a position where no matter who went home on her HOH, somebody in the trio was going to go home, and that's a win. I think also the issue, I mean, she says she would have nominated Chelsea if she had been, if she had been able to use her veto, and she wasn't, so she didn't nominate Chelsea because of that. But I think even with the not ending up nominating Chelsea, which would have been a great move to have T-Core and Chelsea up against each other, I think Leo was smart too. The chemo T-Core Rubina trio, there was less chance of her infiltrating that, whereas MJ and Leah had been aligned longer, or maybe not longer, because I know MJ and Chelsea have been aligned for a little while and they have that God connection and like they're close, but Leah has a relationship with MJ where targeting one of her numbers may have been less ideal than getting the trio out, who that's really their only numbers. You know what I mean? Like, Leah has a relationship with MJ, and maybe targeting that trio, breaking up, like getting Chelsea out. Obviously, she couldn't nominate Cam because she made the deal with him and she wasn't going to go back on that. They don't have a lot of faith in Leah, and she's never really been in any formal alliances except now with Angela. So it makes sense, and obviously the snoots, but like she's never been in a big alliance. She hasn't had those connections. So it's not like she has a lot of trust amongst people. I understand the wanting to not isolate connections that she may have had. So I think targeting the trio made more sense than her going after Chelsea, even though Chelsea may be more of a threat than T-Core, because Chelsea is close with MJ, and that could have cut the ties with MJ, and she could have also not had the votes. Like, if it was T-Core versus Chelsea, who knows? I think T-Core would have likely gone home anyway. So I think it was smart because she kind of left the door open with MJ. She didn't target that side, and she didn't, like, really, like, you know what I mean? Obviously, she maintained her relationship with Angela. She made good on her promise with Cam. I think it was a smart move. Will it serve her in the long run? I don't know, only because I feel like Leah's in an unfortunate spot where a lot of them don't vibe with her personality, and it's influencing the way they view her as an ally, because they have, like, all of these negative opinions about her as a person and a friend, which then impacts the way they view her as an ally. And I think Quinn going home was really unfortunate for Leah, because he was one of the only people who gave her, like, the benefit of the doubt and, like, believed in her. And I think, like, I don't know, I just have a lot of compassion for Leah, because I feel like she is unknowingly rubbing people the wrong way, and nobody's telling her that she's rubbing people the wrong way, and she hasn't been, like, that deceitful, or, like, which is even fine if she is, but it's just, like, I understand, like, the thing is, it's hard, because I'm, like, not targeting Chelsea, MJ, or Cam, like, maintained favor for this upcoming week, but will it serve her? Like, if the veto wins, will the HOH, like, you know what I mean? Because MJ did win HOH for week 10. It's like, will that really carry over? Probably not. MJ really isn't that reliable of a person. Quinn literally kept her safe and then they backstabbed her. Like, I backstabbed him. Like, I don't really know how long it's going to last Leah, but I don't really totally think it's a fault of her own, because I think when people don't like you personally, like, I don't know. There's a lot of, like, and maybe they know something about Leah that I don't, but it's just, for me, I don't know. I feel like they've kind of written her off, or they, like, judge her. I feel like Leah, due to the personal disconnect, is going to struggle in the game, because as much as it is a game, and as much as winning competitions and strategy and all of that matters, and a lot of these people do put, like, strategic moves over their personal connections, a lot of them also don't, and I think with Leah, a lot of people are just going to go after her because they don't like her as much as the other people, or she didn't form those connections early on. Like, I feel like Leah is just in an unfortunate position due to some other circumstances. So I really feel like no matter what decision she made, she was kind of going to be screwed a little bit for the future. like, I think it made sense, and I think it was smart, and I think hopefully it built favor. Like, if MJ's smart, she's not going to get rid of Leah, who is one of her numbers. But I feared that MJ is playing for Chelsea more than she's playing for herself. So I just don't know how much it's going to serve Leah in the long run, not because it was a bad move, but because I think some players aren't, like, I don't mean anything by this, but I really don't think MJ is good at the game. Nothing against her personally. I have no feeling, but I really just don't think she's good at the game because I feel like she's, like, getting rid of her own numbers to serve Chelsea. Like, she's a great asset to Chelsea, and it's, like, a great testament to how good of a game Chelsea is playing. But I don't think MJ, like, she's fine, like, ostracizing, like, Angela. She's fine, like, getting rid of Leah. It's, like, you are literally handing Chelsea the game. And you can win competitions. You can get to the end. There's no need to, like, it's just weird to me, if that makes sense. Like, there are just a lot of, I guess, feelings I have about Leah's standing in the game and about how Chelsea views Leah and all of these things that don't feel, like, based in the game or, like, there's much that Leah can do. Because if people don't like you, people don't like you. And they're not telling her, hey, you talk too much about yourself, or, like, they're not telling her any of these things. And then they're just mad at her for doing it. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's hard because I don't know how long it's going to last her in the game. I think Angela's move to use the veto on Kimo was really smart. I think Chelsea's a great player. I'm rooting for Leah. I don't know how much farther she's going to go in the game. I would love it if Angela kept getting far. I think it'd be interesting. I feel like at this point, Chelsea's the one to look out for. Like, I feel like it's Chelsea's game to lose, but we'll see, because I'm not, anything can happen. Like, that's the good thing about this game, is something could shake up, and who knows, Chelsea could be out and then the game opens. But right now it feels like if they don't make some decisions and they don't get Chelsea out soon, like, Chelsea will take it all the way to the end. And that's my perspective. But I will share more about week 10 and then also the double this upcoming week. Sorry this episode's a day late, and also that it's shorter than normal, but I didn't have a ton to say. So thank you so much for tuning in. It means a lot. If you enjoyed the episode, follow me wherever you listen to podcasts, rate and review, all of that good stuff. And you will hear from me next week for my week 10 recap and the double eviction recap. Bye, guys.